BBC World Service, and now One Planet. Leslie Kerwin reports on the influence corporate funding plays in the debate on climate change.
Cut carbon, expose Exxon, is the cry. I'm in Fort Worth, Texas, and the target of all this protest around me is a big petrol station at the intersection of two busy highways. It's operated by oil giant ExxonMobil, the most profitable corporation in the world. These protesters accuse the company of spreading doubt about the science of climate change to protect its own commercial interests.
Exxon is one of the biggest naysayers against global warming. They have the power to make a difference, and they don't.
They've pretty much taken over the White House and the Capitol. You know, their people have been running environmental policy for the last 7 years or more.
They just continue to be part of the problem. You know, they're the reason that being the change is so difficult. So that's why we need to step it up and make them stop.
Well, now someplace else you know, and all wind can do is blow.
But are these voices of protest justified? And more broadly, how much does corporate money influence both sides of the debate on climate change? That's the subject of this One Planet program here on BBC World Service.
It's a big, big win from Wall Street and Washington.
Concern over ExxonMobil's approach has come not just from environmental pressure groups, but from bands of scientists, including the 350-year-old Royal Society in Britain, which last September sent a letter of protest to ExxonMobil. Its vice president is Professor Sir David Wallace.
We had obtained information about the fact that they were funding groups which were actually distributing and publicising information about climate change, scientific information, which we regarded as misleading. It was misleading about our understanding of science. And the misleading of scientific understanding is actually something which the society really has a responsibility to speak out for.
The science at issue is whether it's the human race which is responsible for warming the atmosphere. The influential UN body, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, says this is 90% certain. And next week, it will recommend policies to address that warming. But there are shades of opinion in the scientific world. A small number of vocal opponents argue that much of the warming happens due to natural cycles, not greenhouse gases. ExxonMobil has been accused of supporting the minority opinion against what's seen as the main consensus. We'll hear from the company and its critics.
I think Exxon has been the spearhead of a large corporate campaign to hold back public action on global warming. They probably slowed us down a decade or more, and that's a pretty crucial decade.
That's Kurt Davis, research director at Greenpeace and one of Exxon's chief critics. He showed me a memo dating from 1998, which he said was produced by ExxonMobil and other corporate interests, which opposed the U.S. joining the Kyoto Treaty.
It says, "Victory will be achieved when average citizens understand uncertainties in climate science, when the media understands uncertainties." The fact that they talk about victory being achieved when they've reached science teachers and media and policymakers, it characterizes it as a very aggressive and well-funded plan.
Of course, ExxonMobil, like any corporation, uses money to protect the legitimate interests of its shareholders. But did it go too far in trying to influence the scientific debate? The Union of Concerned Scientists claims that it did. Alden Meyer, strategy director of the UCS, argued that the company manufactured uncertainty about the causes of climate change.
The report that we put out in January documents that over a period of almost a decade, Exxon contributed $16 million to 43 separate organizations that in various ways were promoting a network of scientists, we call them contrarians, who challenged the central finding that human-induced global warming is underway and is a very serious problem that needs to be dealt with. And we drew some parallels in the report to the effort of the tobacco industry in previous decades to disparage the evidence about links of secondhand smoke to public health.
You call it disinformation. ExxonMobil would probably say that they're just keeping open a debate about something which isn't yet certain.
Well, and what we say to that is that they have a responsibility to make sure the organizations they support are basing their findings and their recommendations on peer-reviewed science, subjecting their own reports to the peer review process. And we document in the report a number of instances where that was not the case. In terms of the debate, I think the recent report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which said with a very high degree of certainty that human activities, the burning of fossil fuels for our vehicles and our power plants, are responsible for the warming we've observed, and if not checked, will contribute to additional warming over the next century. I think that's now sort of beyond legitimate challenge.
In 2005, though, ExxonMobil's chairman and chief executive Rex Tillerson defended funding the groups in question.
We're going to continue to support groups that we think have good scientists involved. You know, the fact that they take a contrary view, I don't view to be bad. As I said earlier, I think having a good debate on this is what's sorely needed.
That is the only principled oil and gas company I know of in the U.S., and I think it's the case they have a CEO who just says, you know, he is not going to be bamboozled by nonsense.
That's Richard Lindzen, professor of meteorology at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. He is not convinced there is a threat of significant man-made global warming, and he wants the debate kept alive.
ExxonMobil actually took a position that was honest. It said, you know, it has staff who are researching this issue. It doesn't look like a serious issue, and they're not going to play games with the public. They're going to just oppose this.
And yet the Royal Society in the UK wrote a letter to ExxonMobil suggesting misleading information out there.
Wasn't that a disgrace? I mean, I hope people realized how degraded the Royal Society had become. They don't know what they're talking about.
There are more allegations against ExxonMobil, focused here in Washington, D.C. Its critics claim the company has exercised undue influence on White House policy, contributing to America's inactivity over global warming. It's not just the money the company, like any other, spends on lobbying politicians. Rumors abound of what happened behind the scenes at the White House. A few years ago, Rick Pills worked for the U.S. Climate Change Science Program. His job was to oversee the writing of reports for policymakers. He claimed that he saw the science watered down and censored by a White House aide.
It seemed that they were proceeding from their political position and intervening in the communication of the science itself. So this was not just an honest disagreement about policy, but it was an abuse of science.
Why do you think that the Bush administration would have wanted to downplay the possible impact of global warming?
They were very closely tied to a political clientele among the major energy interests. And these are industry interests that want to sell product and make profits and do not want to face regulatory constraints on the use of their product. Phil Cooney, who had been the climate team leader at the American Petroleum Institute, that's the principal lobbying arm of the oil companies, he was brought in the summer of 2001 to be the chief of staff of the White House Council on Environmental Quality. So he was basically an agent of the White House and I think an agent of the oil industry. And any publication that went out, you know, to Congress had to clear through his office, and they would either suppress references, or they would ignore them, or they would, if it was a report by the National Academy of Sciences, they would misrepresent what it said and misuse it.
Eventually, in 2005, Rick Pills decided to resign and took evidence of the alleged tampering to the New York Times. Within days, Phil Cooney stepped down from the White House. What happened next aroused much media comment. Phil Cooney took a job with ExxonMobil. So what is ExxonMobil's reaction to all the criticism of its past actions? And what is its current thinking about climate change?
The biggest challenges attract the best. That's why ExxonMobil is working on ways to meet the world's growing need for energy while reducing emissions. It's not easy, but we're getting there.
That TV ad may show which way the wind is blowing. It seems the company's attitude has been softening. Look at its corporate website, and climate change is an issue on the homepage. It takes you to a page where ExxonMobil talks about addressing the risks. So how much has it changed its tune? We asked to speak to ExxonMobil about its stance on global warming.
In 0.2 miles, turn right on Las Colinas Boulevard.
I'm in a car heading for 5959 Las Colinas Boulevard in Dallas, Texas. It is the global headquarters of ExxonMobil. So what will the company have to say about the rise in global temperatures? And will it concede that it is largely due to the burning of fossil fuels such as oil? I'm about to go in to meet the Vice President in charge of Public Affairs, Ken Cohen.
The increase in temperatures is a risk. It's a risk that needs to be addressed. And as the IPCC scenarios document, if this increase in temperature continues without mitigation, then there will be serious impacts. So are there actions that we can take? Are there technologies that can be applied that would somehow reduce that risk tied to increasing temperatures?
So are you saying then that greenhouse gases are caused by human activity and that is what's at the basis of climate change?
Certainly, I'll say that certainly man's use of fossil fuels, land use changes all contribute to the increase in CO2 emissions. What should be studied and actions should be based on, how do we lower the greenhouse gas emissions from man's activities?
But forgive me, I don't think you've quite answered my question. You know, do you believe that the significant part of the global warming we've seen has been caused by man's activity?
Well, we don't think that's a debate we need to be in. The debate that we would like to be in is what policies should we be thinking about and implementing that address increasing greenhouse gas emissions. And whether or not those policies and the reduction in greenhouse gas emissions actually has an impact on the temperature increase that we're seeing, that we're going to watch and see.
Let's talk about your public relations and communications strategy on climate change. The critics say ExxonMobil has over the years spread disinformation on the science of climate change by channeling funding to a number of groups who've been robustly skeptical.
Mm-hmm. You know, I do get that question quite often, so I thank you for asking it. If you look at the money that we fund on the science side, it goes to some of the best science in the area. It would include the program at MIT, at Battelle, at Yale. Now, on the policy side, as you know, there was a robust debate a few years ago whether or not the Kyoto Protocol would be adopted in the United States. And our company believed then and believes now that because this is a global problem, requiring global solutions, that the Kyoto-type approach, which was not a global approach, was not the appropriate policy. Many associated our funding of advocacy opposed to Kyoto with funding of skepticism on whether or not this was an issue to be taken seriously. I understand why people thought that way. And back in 2005, we have made a decision to stop funding about a handful of groups that were focused not on the science, but focused on policy adoption.
But in the past, I think you funded organizations like the Heartland Institute, the Competitive Enterprise Institute, Frontiers of Freedom, the George C. Marshall Institute. And just the Heartland Institute this year says the science behind man-made global warming is a fraud.
We disagree with that statement.
But you were funding them.
In the past, we have, and those groups don't speak for us. One thing that we have decided to do, I think that this may answer your question, we've decided to participate more directly ourselves, speak for ourselves, as opposed to funding a whole number of groups and then have the implication that they are speaking on our behalf.
Let me ask you a bit about the public relations side of things. I mean, there have been some unfortunate issues. Hiring Phil Cooney, the former chief of staff at the White House Council on Environmental Quality, just days after he'd resigned under a cloud over allegations that he played down government climate reports. It doesn't look good.
Well, all I can do is let the record speak for itself. Mr. Cooney is a member of our team. He's doing a very fine job. He is not involved in the climate issue, and I would have to say that the facts on the way that issue has been portrayed depart from reality.
You've obviously got a lot of things to tell the public about what you are doing. Do you think in the past that you have spoken directly enough to the public?
Well, you're requiring me to give myself a report card here. I think there's room to improve, and we're trying to talk more about what we're doing and to both meet the energy challenge, but also do so in a way with lower emissions.
Ken Cohen, ExxonMobil's public affairs chief. And by the way, Exxon confirmed it is still funding the Heartland Institute. So what's the reaction to all this from some of its harshest critics, the Union of Concerned Scientists? We let Alden Meyer of the UCS listen to what Ken Cohen had had to say.
I think it's a belated but laudable recognition of reality. The science is largely settled now. The world is moving on. Even the U.S. Congress is now debating real solutions to the problem. And there's an old saying in Washington that it's better to be at the table rather than on the menu. And I think ExxonMobil now sees that action is happening in the Congress, and they want to now be in there trying to minimize the damage that any regulatory action in the U.S. has to their market share and their profitability.
Does this mean that the Union of Concerned Scientists will stop campaigning against ExxonMobil?
Well, we're waiting to see just what actions they do take. For example, Mr. Cohen says that they have stopped funding, I believe he said, a handful of groups. Our report documented contributions to 43 groups, so obviously if they've stopped funded a handful but are continuing to fund the rest, that's not complete progress. We also want to see if they make a public acknowledgement of the need for mandatory limits on greenhouse gas emissions. If it does, that's real progress.
As America's biggest oil producer, ExxonMobil will no doubt continue to spend large amounts on lobbying, political funding, and support for policy groups. Corporate money plays a huge role in America's political sphere. And everyone on every side of the argument plays the game. Take the biofuels industry. Thanks to increasing pressure to reduce carbon emissions and cut the use of foreign oil, it has used corporate and political clout to win billions in subsidies from the US taxpayer. Farming and refining companies are producing fuels made from plant or animal matter. They are renewable, homegrown, and marketed as less damaging than fossil fuels. One of those biofuels even powers this year's IndyCar races. It's ethanol, often made from corn. President Bush this year set targets for the use of renewable fuels. Farmers in corn-growing states like Iowa and Kansas have benefited from the boom, seeing a doubling of the corn price in less than a year. But all of this is despite serious scientific concerns about biofuels, especially corn ethanol, whose production requires lots of land and consumes lots of energy, some say more than the fuel itself produces. Professor Tad Patsek of the University of Berkeley in California is one of ethanol's critics.
My concerns are twofold. One, that it will never produce volumes of fuel sufficient to satisfy our thirst for fuels. And two, when we produce ethanol, we severely damage the environment.
How do we damage the environment?
Well, ethanol in the United States, it's produced from corn, and corn is one of the most nitrogen-thirsty and chemical-thirsty plants around, and it causes a lot of pollution and a lot of soil damage to the U.S. agriculture.
Do you think that the ethanol industry has told the truth about the science of ethanol?
Well, the role of the ethanol industry is to make as much money as possible and get as many investors as possible, and research does not come first. We are being told, do not worry, drive the same old inefficient cars, don't change your lifestyle, and the biofuels we will introduce in the future will be clean and renewable, and so therefore do not worry. And they are anything but that.
So have the ethanol producers downplayed the environmental risks of their product? Have the scientific facts been skewed in pursuit of profits? I went to see Bob Dineen, president of America's Renewable Fuels Association, which represents the ethanol producers. He defended its green credentials.
I think ethanol is going to be an increasingly important factor in this country's strategy to reduce greenhouse gases. The 5.5 billion gallons of ethanol that was sold last year reduced greenhouse gas emissions by some 8 million tons. That's the equivalent of taking 1.2 million vehicles completely off the road. So it's already having an impact.
But do you agree that there are serious concerns that you'd have to plant out vast swathes of America to make enough biofuels to power everything that's needed?
There are certainly people that have posed hypothetical situations where if every bushel of corn in this country was processed into ethanol, we wouldn't have much of a dent in terms of our overall fuel supply. Well, yet, no kidding. But we're not talking about processing every bushel of corn, number one. And we do recognize that there are limitations to what you can do from grain. And we do envision a future where biofuels are being produced from a variety of abundant feedstocks.
It's a familiar question by now. Can science be distorted when vested interests get cozy with government? Professor Tad Patzek argues that's what's happening.
Scientists basically are now used as a tool to justify political decisions. And in doing so, they damage reputation and a good standing in the society of science.
You are a dissenting voice, though. Under a democracy, you can still speak out.
Oh, absolutely. And I am speaking out right now. But I would say this will not help me in terms of my own funding picture.
Have you got evidence that it's affected your funding already?
Well, I would like to abstain from comments, but the short answer is yes.
Do you have examples of other scientists who've been disadvantaged by dissenting?
Yes. Actually, you can clearly see a distinction between scientists who are going along with what agribusiness thinks is correct or appropriate and those who don't. And the scientists who toe the line, receive funding, go to attractive conferences and are treated very well. But if anyone speaks out just once, the consequences, from what I understood by talking to the people involved, are very severe.
Would they lose their job?
No, they don't lose the job, but they lose the funding. And suddenly, invitations to meetings evaporate. You don't go to the attractive conferences. It's somewhat more difficult to publish your papers. And there are many things, subtle and not so subtle, which keep scientists in line.
The same charge is made by scientists who are in the minority in the climate change debate. Scientists such as Professor Richard Lindzen of MIT.
Climate research, for the most part, the Hadley Center in the UK, was created to deal with global warming concerns. Same thing was true for the Max Planck Institute in Germany. Some wag pointed out a few months ago that if anyone actually solved the climate issue scientifically, the likelihood is it couldn't get published.
Are you suggesting that the debate on climate change is being shut down?
I think there's every attempt to shut it down. Sure, there are plenty of people who are staking their economic futures on this. And if the issue goes away, they're in trouble.
So who would be staking their economic futures on this?
Well, a lot of hedge funds are looking into it at this stage, how much they should go over into emissions permit trading. Look at British Petroleum, for crying out loud. Do you think it's simple virtue?
Well, I guess an awful lot of people reading corporate websites would think that there was a moral imperative somewhere.
I don't think that drives most companies, to be honest.
So what can be done to resist pressure from corporations and governments to promote the scientific story that suits them best? I asked Rick Pills, the whistleblower who said he saw climate science doctored by the White House.
I don't think there's a simple answer to that. I mean, everyone has a right to have their interest represented in a democracy. But I do think we have a system now where the corporations have acquired so much sway over government that there's an imbalance in that the way corporate interests are defined in the near term is not necessarily the same thing as the interests of society more broadly. It's very hard to see a way around it except by continuing to raise the issue and to make sure that the widest possible array of interests are adequately represented.
Corporations will always defend their financial interests tooth and nail. That's what they do, and scientists cannot remain immune to their influence. Amid a fog of vested interests and a cacophony of voices, how do the non-scientists among us judge which version of science we should trust? That's all from this week's One Planet.
One Planet was presented by Leslie Cohen and produced by Ed Butler. Next week's programme comes from Perth, Western Australia, once described as the first city of the modern era, which may have to be abandoned because of a lack of water. That's next week on One Planet.